Welcome to What She Said. I'm your host, Lucy Lucroft, a freelance journalist and blogger from London. Each week, I chat to awesome humans about their journey to where they are today, and we share lots of blogging tips and tricks too. You can hear the entire back catalogue, as well as new episodes wherever you listen to podcasts by searching for my name or searching What She Said, or you can go to my website, wanderloose.com. And if you want to connect with me online, you can find me on Instagram or Twitter at Lucy Lucroft. So, hello, Fiona.
Hi, Lucy.
Welcome to the podcast. I was about to say welcome back, and the reason I'm saying that is because you're going to be on the podcast series 3 at some point, as yet untitled and undated. This is a bit of a different episode because Fiona is going to be interviewing me. So for long-time listeners of What She Said, Sam Sparrow interviewed me back in season 1, I think it was episode 10. I'll link to it in the show notes. But I haven't kind of been on my own podcast to talk about myself since Podmas. So I thought it'd be quite nice. And Fiona is a brilliant host and a podcaster herself. And I will link to her podcast in the show notes, but I thought she would be the perfect person to interview me. So I'm going to hand it over to you now.
Well, thank you very much for that. I just hope I can deliver now after that introduction. but no, I'm really excited to do this. It's going to be really good.
Me too.
Yeah. So I thought we would start by having a bit of a catch up from. So I listened to your episode where Sam Sparrow interviewed you, and I just thought that we would start by having a bit of a catch up about how your life has changed since then and what you've been up to.
Yeah, so when Sam and I chatted, it was so early days with the podcast, and things were, it feels like things were really different. Mm. I guess they were, but it's probably a year ago now, maybe, that we chatted. so I would say that my work and my life and my actual physical location has changed a lot in the past year. So I've moved from London to Brighton fairly recently, and I took a bit of time off while we were moving and officially went back to work in January after a year of maternity leave, which I basically mostly worked throughout it. So yeah, I guess that's kind of what's been happening. And the podcast has probably been the one constant throughout the past year, is that I've been putting out episodes every week. I took a tiny little break over Christmas, but then I put out Podmas episodes, just little solo episodes. And then, yeah, I guess the biggest change has been in January when I went back to work. I was so nervous to officially go back to work, which is kind of strange, given that I'd never really stopped. But maybe it was because being officially going back to work and having no comfort blanket anymore of maternity leave meant that, yeah, I really had to make money.
Yeah, you couldn't sort of excuse it. You couldn't sort of say, well, I'm on maternity leave, so yeah.
I think, yeah, that's the perfect, yeah, you put that perfectly. Yeah, I think because of that meant that I was just, I don't know, I just felt quite lost as well. I didn't really know, I'd had such a long time out from journalism, and I didn't know if I would be able to still, I hadn't pitched for such a long time. I'd built up some really good relationships with editors, so I didn't realise how privileged I'd been over the past few years that I was able to, fall back on those great relationships, albeit ones that I had worked hard on building myself. But yeah, so I just didn't really know. And also being, predominantly before I went on maternity leave, before I got pregnant, I was a travel journalist, and traveling with a baby.
Not that easy, so I've heard.
Yeah, not that easy at all. So yeah, it was just a big state of flux. It was really, personally, there was a lot going on, and I just didn't know where everything was going to go. And then I thought, oh, you know what, I think I'm going to write a course about SEO, because I'm really good at SEO in comparison to everybody that I've spoken to. And I'm really sick of seeing bloggers be kind of bamboozled by it and feel like they, I don't know, like it's a big mystery. Well, you know what I'm like. I can't bear bullshit. I can't bear like people trying to talk down to other people and make things sound more complex than they are.
Do you think people do that to sell their services though? Do you think that like SEOers, if that's even a word, like try and keep some sort of mystery around it so that it looks more complicated than it is?
Yeah, I do. And actually, I don't necessarily think the proper SEO geeks, like the Neil Patels or whatever of the world, I don't necessarily think that they are the ones trying to make it sound more complex than it is. I think it's people who want to sell a blogging course or, you know, whatever.
Mm.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and also I think there's probably a bit of, it makes, if you've mastered it yourself through, by hook or by crook, and you've gone through all the trials and tribulations of being a blogger and doing it wrong and then feeling embarrassed and then finding out the secret to it, then I do think there's sometimes a bit of a human nature thing to want to keep it to yourself and make it sound harder than it is, because I think we all have this mindset sometimes, apart from the really, like the Dalai Lama maybe, that it's, you know, it's like this.
He doesn't count.
He's a higher being. I think we often have this scarcity mindset that we can fall into out of fear. I know I'm prone to it myself, so.
Yeah, and I think in the blogging sphere, and essentially, which does sometimes feel quite competitive, like there are a lot of bloggers out there all, and sometimes it does feel like everyone is kind of competing for the same things. SEO is such a, like, a key part of that. I think it's a very easy trap to fall into.
Yeah.
So I think it's really great that you designed a course to kind of share your knowledge with everyone.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I didn't expect that it would do as well as it did, and I made lots of mistakes, and but it was all really, really good learning. So then I realized because I'd dabbled with blog coaching in the past, and I actually didn't really get on very well with the kind of one-to-one model, and I don't think I was very good at it either, and that's fine because I tried it and I didn't, you know, mess anyone up too much, and hopefully. So then I think the one-to-many option is definitely much more suited to me.
So do you kind of see yourself transitioning from sort of journalism into more, like, entrepreneurship? And, like, do you see, like, courses being, like, a bigger part of, like, your future business?
I don't think so. And I have thought about that. But when I think about the things that I really, really want out of life and the things that I really enjoy doing, journalism will always be the number one, just because I love writing so much. Writing is always going to be the heart of everything that I do, I think. Because even in writing the course, the thing that I really enjoyed was really creating the content and translating seemingly complex things into really quite simple kind of, you know, simple things.
And as a participant of that course, even though I haven't quite finished it yet, you do that really well. Like, you really break stuff down into very, and SEO is something that was completely above my head and still sort of is. I'm sure that once I finish the course, I won't feel the same way. But it's something that I've kind of always been like, oh, I don't care about that, because I just couldn't bring myself to actually do the work to kind of figure it all out. If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
And yeah, you do. You really break stuff down into very, like, it makes sense when I read your course.
Oh, that's a huge compliment. Thank you.
Yeah. So talking a bit more about journalism, because, and I don't know when you're going to publish this, but today you have just launched your My First Byline course.
Yeah, your first byline.
Your first, sorry.
No, it's fine. It could be your first byline.
It could be mine. So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's very exciting. And secondly, so first of all, starting with like your own experience, how did you get your first byline?
Well, it's a very funny story. So I had been writing for a long, long time, and I was living abroad being a digital nomad. And I, when we came back, because we talked about this on your podcast, actually, when I kind of came back and forth for weddings and various bits and bobs. And there was a 3-week stint when we were back in London and I was temping for Office Angels. And I got placed in Immediate Media. I was just being a receptionist. But I was kind of checking people in and out and calling people all day, you know, transferring calls and what have you. And Immediate Media, if you don't know, is a publishing house. I don't know, would they be called a publishing house? Yeah, yeah, they are a publishing house, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
And they basically own all of the BBC magazines and more. So I've written for them in various guises, actually, for different publications, but amongst kind of Top of the Pop magazine, all of the BBC kind of magazines that you can imagine, Radio Times. They also publish Lonely Planet Traveller magazine.
Ah.
Yes.
Very handy.
And on my last day, I basically called the editorial assistant, I think I called her and said, do you ever need interns or do you ever accept pitches, kind of cold pitches? And she was like, just send me over your CV, essentially. And and I did, and I sent her my blog, and she called back immediately and was like, yep, okay, great. So if you want to come in for the next 2 weeks. And so I did, and just got stuck in shadowing her and basically being an editorial assistant. And at the end of my 2 weeks, I'd got my first byline, which doesn't always happen, but I guess because I was a bit older maybe, and I had quite a bit of writing experience behind me, although none of it was for anyone that I thought were made me worth anything. So, I mean, it was the tiniest little byline, but it was in print and it was for something that I dreamed of. So I was just so chuffed. And that's where it all began.
Yeah, but it's a byline for Lonely Planet magazine,
yes,
which is amazing. Really, yeah, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever been as proud. And I still, you know, like that's still on, counts on my bylines, and I'll still quote that because I'm proud, because it was, you know, I'm not the best writer that's ever lived, and I'm not the most clever, but I believed in myself, and I just, and it was a bit of like tenacity, I think, really. It's tenacity, grabbing the opportunity, making things happen for myself. And that's probably, yeah, I think that's probably why I'm so proud of that moment, because it was all of those things culminated in one. It wasn't just, yes, I crafted a great pitch, or yeah, it fell into my lap because someone knew someone who knew someone. I could have easily left that 2 week stint of being a receptionist, or actually I think it was like 4 or 5 days. I could have easily left there thinking, oh yeah, well, you know, I know their details, so maybe I'll call them. And it's a bit of a, like, I hope it's inspiring to other people, because,
yeah,
again, people like to make you think that it's so hard to become a freelance writer, and it's not. It really isn't.
Yeah, again, I think it is, again, one of those things that's kind of built up to be a lot harder than it is. And I think your story is great in that sense, and it, because it just shows that you can do it. And it sounds like it's like the perfect story to, you know, and the perfect like experience for you to then write a course from, because like you say, you didn't have like a leg up in any way.
Yeah. And I suppose, I don't want to say that, you know, I don't have any privilege. I definitely do, in that I was able to take up this unpaid opportunity for 2 weeks, because I could, I had, you know, I can understand why. And I do think that it's a real shame that there's this real intern culture in the arts that mean that basically it's our, you know, journalism is a bit whitewashed now, because who can afford to come out of a journalism degree, live in London and not be paid for 6 months? Well, people whose parents can afford to pay for them. And I think that's that's a real shame, because what's being reflected back to us now in our media will ultimately end up just being middle class white people. But at the same time, I did seize opportunities when I could.
It's the same with book publishing, which is which was sort of the area I went into straight after university. I worked for free for 6 months as well. And book publishing is pretty much entirely white middle class. And that's a real shame, because I think that reflects in the books that's being in the books that are being published. And it's the same as it reflects in the content that's being published in magazines as well.
Totally.
Because you don't have a diversity of writers, or the gate, if the gatekeepers aren't diverse, then they're not going to be letting through a diverse I mean, I think they can let through a diverse. I mean, I don't think every gatekeeper purposefully doesn't let through diversity, but I think that there's not that sort of natural flow that comes from that.
Yeah, and then in turn, the people reading it aren't seeing people that look like themselves, so therefore it feels even more of a hurdle to get to it. And I think it's a real shame, and it's very easy for me to say that as a sort of white. I'm ethnically ambiguous, so, but most people think, you know, I certainly from the outside just look like a white middle class girl. So
why did you decide to do the course then, and how did you kind of find the process of creating it? Was it easier having done the SEO one?
Yeah, it was easier. There was definitely more pressure, because I thought, I know all the areas that I went wrong in, and I just pressure from myself, really. I just wanted it to be so much better. But it was easier. And I did a course about launching courses, which is kind of meta. But it was such a brilliant course. I can't even tell you.
Can I ask what course it was?
Yes, yeah. It's called, this is a bit embarrassing because it sounds like I've totally ripped it off, but it's called Your First Course. No, hang on.
Yeah.
Is it called Your First Course Launch? And it's so good. It was really simple. It was just brilliant. And, you know, really, I think it was really quite cheap. And so I thought, well, you know, you need to speculate to accumulate. I think it'd be worth it. And I did it. And oh my goodness, the course launched today, and already it's done so much better than my previous course, which I was blown away by.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. And like, just when I say it's done better, I don't just mean in sales, but also in how smooth it's gone, how organized I felt. I think how happy the students have felt. And I just feel a lot more confident about it. So if anybody is wanting to launch a course through Teachable, and actually hers isn't specific to Teachable, but she does talk about that quite a bit, I would definitely recommend doing her course. So that's how I kind of, the reason I wanted to do the course was literally the same reason I wanted to, my kind of motivation for everything really is to just be more like, make things more honest and show people that it's not as hard, and help the people who I see as me 5 years ago. That's kind of my why.
Yeah, like help people, like throw down a ladder to help people come up behind you, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're so much more eloquent than I am. That's all your copywriting.
it's also just as much easier. And this is the trick about copywriting, is it's so much easier to put into words what other people are trying to say. I try to do it for myself, it's a lot harder.
Do you find, I have a question for you actually, do you find that with copywriting, because I see quite a lot of, and this might be a huge generalisation, but it's certainly in my field in journalism and in blogging, I see a lot of people transitioning into copywriting, and I'm putting it in inverted commas because I don't think people realise that there's actually a real skill to copywriting. It's not just writing copy. There's a whole marketing element to it, and there's so much more, and there's branding. And do you see quite a lot of people moving into your industry kind of misguidedly or with misguided
intent?
Yeah.
I don't know whether I keep I'm kind of very much like, I do follow a lot of like other like creative people online, and I'm very much part of that world. But I don't know whether I have slight blinders on when it comes to other copywriters, because I definitely don't. There are certain people who I've got like a group of people who I'm of other copywriters who I now talk to like every other week, which is great because it's like a real like support network. I think that it's a completely different skill to writing like content and writing copy. So writing like blog posts, writing long form, and like a copy is basically saying what you want to say as clearly as possible in as fewer words as possible. And that is a real knack.
Oh my God. Yes. Brevity is like my nemesis. I could never be a copywriter, Fiona. I bow down to you. I'm just, no.
But it's also, I don't think people understand that writing short takes a lot longer than writing long.
Yeah.
Like I can bash out a blog post, 1,000 words in, you know, a couple of hours. But if I'm going to write the front page or a work with me page, like it takes a lot longer to do that, to kind of get that like crispness.
Yeah, totally.
But I think for me, the biggest thing has been sort of like figuring out my own process and kind of taking ownership of it a bit more. And I think that's also slightly kind of meant that I no longer feel like a writer for hire, which is what I was doing for, like 18 months freelance, basically. Like I was just kind of like, people were telling me what they wanted and I was just doing it. Sort of kind of think of it more as a business, and like taking ownership of my own process and coming up with my own way of doing things. Has made it all feel a lot better. And I feel like that also kind of means that no one else is doing it the same way as I'm doing it, which means I am kind of, I mean, I'm very much in my own lane, I hope.
Oh, I love that.
Oh gosh, and now I've completely lost my train of thought. Because we're talking about the course. Because you also got some other people to do guest
didn't
you?
Yeah.
So who have you got involved in that?
So I've got my bestie, I've got Lauren Croft, L Croft, who has just been on your podcast.
She has.
There's a lot of links to go in the show notes, and I'm terrible for saying I'll link it in the show notes, and I never do.
I did. I had that with Elle's episode. I like listened back to it, and I never make notes of what I should put in the show notes. I said it at least twice.
Oh God, it's terrible. I'm glad other podcasters don't do it as well.
You're not alone.
So no. Lauren is writing a chapter all about the importance of editing, and I think people just don't realize how important editing is. And actually it comes back to your point about writing shorter does take longer, and especially when you get the way the course is structured is that it really heavily focuses on the pitch, because I think that is the biggest hurdle for most people, is finding journalist details, knowing what to pitch, knowing you can pitch, knowing how to pitch, and then I also focus then on, you know, when you get your commission, what happens then? Because that is another hurdle. How much do you charge? How do you write the feature? So editing, I think, is super important, because sending something back to an editor that is 300 words over the specified limit might not seem like a big deal, but it is. So that will be an awesome chapter. And then Monica Stott, who is the travel hack, has written a lesson on typewriting. So Monica, the travel hack, says it in the name, did a degree in journalism, and she was going to be a journalist. And then she was a journalist, and then became super successful travel blogger. So she's got a really unique perspective, because she is a blogger, but she also has a formal training in journalism, which I don't have actually. But she's doing a lesson on typewriting, which I think will be awesome. And it's something that will be helpful regardless of whether you want to be a journalist or not. And I've also got a lesson from Sarah Arnold, another one of my friends, who is a freelance journalist. She's written for The Guardian, Independent. She's written for The Mail. She's written for loads and loads of people. And she also started out as a blogger. She's a very newsy journalist. She's amazing at getting a good hook for a story, and she that's what she's writing her lesson on. It's the art of smelling the hook, smelling a good story, because that is something that I think is super, super important.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing. I just want to go back slightly to what you said about your why was basically sort of it's being as honest as possible. And I think that's kind of what you're known for online, I think. And you wrote a really great blog post recently about your stats and sharing your stats, because there's so much I don't know how to put this. There's so much rounding up going on.
Isn't there?
I mean...
We're getting a bit salty, but...
I think it needs to be said. And like I wrote a post recently about like how bloody hard the first few months of running a business are and how everyone makes it look so easy. Mm-hmm. But they're only doing that because they're selling you their products to help you get your business off, to help you with your business. So it's just, and I think it's, so I think there is a lot of like timelines get shortened a lot and like success gets kind of preempted and there's a lot of that going on.
So
how did it feel publishing that post?
I think it felt very vulnerable, and there was definitely elements of me thinking, so the background to it is that I've always been pretty happy with my stats. And then I switched everything over to Squarespace and they dropped off a cliff.
Really?
Yeah, like, so I've never had huge monthly figures. I think my peak was probably about 40,000 a month.
Pretty good though.
Averaging about 30,000. And then it dropped. It went from like 30,000 to about 5,000. I was like, wow. What? That's mental. But there were a lot of problems with the move. The migration was, there was thousands of broken links and I had stacks of AMP errors and loads of things. It was still quite a lot of them haven't been fixed. And if you are migrating your domain, like switching from one domain to another and having to put in redirects then, or switching from one big platform like WordPress to another, like Squarespace or, you know, other hosting providers are available, then you would expect to see a drop in stats, and you would also expect to see a drop in domain authority. That's to be expected, but for a short period of time. So it dropped off a cliff, but I was kind of like, wow, that's huge. But hey-ho, I was kind of expecting that. It's no drama. And then they just stayed. They kind of crawled back up. So this was maybe 3 months. Oh, no, it's actually ages ago now. Probably 5 months ago now. So, but for a good few months, I just kept thinking, oh, maybe they'll go up. I wasn't really doing anything about it. I wasn't really fixing any errors. I wasn't like trying to promote my blog, but I just thought, well, they'll just go back because why wouldn't they? Because I want them to, because I like the look of that number and I liked that. and then I thought, this is ridiculous, because the point where I thought it was really, really ridiculous was when I really wanted to go back to WordPress and do the whole hoopla again just so that I could get my stats back up to where they were. And I didn't even question in myself why do I want that number? And I didn't, someone asked for my media kit and I didn't want to give them my media kit because I hadn't updated it since my stats were the level that I wanted them to be at. So despite the fact that, you know, like my Instagram followers had increased by about 1,000, or despite the fact that maybe my Pinterest engagement had gone up or whatever, I don't even think that's a real thing, but you know what I mean? Like despite all these great other actually tangible, useful metrics going up, or even that I could ask real people for testimonials to say, yes, I bought this product because Lucy recommended it. I was like, no, I don't want to give you a media kit. I don't want to update it because it would have to say 10,000 instead of 30,000, which essentially is complete bullshit. It's a vanity metric, because what does that mean? It means nothing. To me, it means nothing, because I don't, my money doesn't come from affiliate marketing. And even if it did, that doesn't, stats don't necessarily matter. But I got myself into a real negative headspace about it until I was speaking to Jane Carrington, and I said, I think I'm going to do this. I think I'm going to publish my stats. And she was like, well, you know, Jen, like, she was like, well, I think, you know, your thing is honesty. So I guess you've kind of got to walk the walk.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's it. You're right.
Yeah. And I think that's people found, it seemed to me that you had a really good response to it and people found it very refreshing.
Yeah.
Because I think it also kind of says something. It's, I think, and I think you're right that, like, at the end of the day, they don't really mean anything tangible. Like, they're just numbers. And one of the things I always think about is that I know people who have amazing stats, but who barely make rent every month. And I know people who have less than 1,000 followers on Instagram whose businesses are really thriving.
Yes.
So it doesn't, you know, they don't always, like, they're not always a valid indicator of success. Or success in whatever terms. And I'm not just saying success is financial either, but they're not always a valid indicator of that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Yeah, you've put it perfectly, I think. And it always comes down to knowing your why and knowing your goals as well. Like, so I do a monthly profit and loss because I'm a geek. And when I looked at it and was like, oh, so I came back to work in January and I've earned already double in January than I earned the year before. And yeah, like, probably throughout the year, it won't necessarily be, I'm not going to be, you know, publishing a post, my income report, to say, hey, I earned my first million this year. But I'm earning enough money to support myself, to help support my family, and to do nice things. And I'm meeting my income goals. And I am definitely stretching them because I want to earn a lot more. So what? And I'm doing all of this without having the stats that I had before on my blog, because the stats that matter are increasing, and the pounds are increasing, basically, and that are the stats that matter really to me. And I don't want to be crude about it, but I'm not in this totally for the love of it. Like, I do it because I love it, of course, but I do my job to earn money to pay for things that I really like doing, which is travel and eating.
No, I'm exactly the same. And I think that I think that it's good to say that and to be honest about that and to be like, yeah, I do, like, you know, I do run a business. Like, this is, you know, this is something that needs to, you know, it needs to pay. And, yeah, you know, I need to get a salary at the end of every month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's really great to say. So you've also recently moved to Brighton. You mentioned at the beginning that was a big move.
Yeah.
And I think someone in your Facebook group asked me to ask you why you moved to Brighton and how you're finding it.
Oh, yes, they did, didn't they? I forgot about that. I love my Facebook group. You're so amazing, guys.
So do I. I love my Facebook group.
They're the sweet, aren't they, the sweetest? I mean, you're in it. You're the sweetest. Like, I love them. I love them. Yes, so why did I move to Brighton? So me and my husband have wanted to move to Brighton for, it's probably been in the works for about 3-4 years. And we almost moved when we first came back from traveling, and then it didn't work out, and then we went traveling again. And the stars kind of aligned probably later last year, when we just thought, my husband wasn't loving his job, but he was getting promoted quite quickly. So that was one of the main reasons that we stayed, is because the job that he was doing was based in London, but he could do it from everywhere because he's an estate agent. So I think we just got to the kind of end of our tether in our flat. And my cousin had moved back to Brighton And I don't know, really. Like, I'm a very decisive person. I go 100% with my gut. Mm. So I was like, we've got a move. That's it. We're doing it. So we did.
But I think when something feels right, you just like, there's no point questioning it because you're just like, well, this is it then. That's what I'm doing.
I agree. But you know when you know, don't you? Or when you know, exactly. You know, or whatever it is. Yeah.
Exactly. And how have you found it so far?
Oh my God, I love it so much. I was so nervous. So we sold our flat, or we accepted the offer on our flat February the 3rd. And then it took until April the 13th before we actually moved, which is a fairly smooth sale. But in that last month, well, you know what it's like when you're moving from somewhere that you suddenly see all the good things about it and you're like, oh God, how will I cope? And you know, I've been in London since I was 18, so that's a really long time. I've grown up in London. I consider London to be, in fact, yeah, in all the ways I consider London to be my hometown, even though I'm from the seaside in Kent. But so yeah, I was like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do without, I don't know, the tube? What am I going to do without my local? And I have such a nice community, blah, 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 blah.
I love how you were going to miss the tube.
Yeah, I know. Like, how ridiculous is that? Of all the things to miss in London.
Yeah, just sitting on that hot, sweaty tube, just being like, oh, I'm really going to miss you.
But you know what? Because I wasn't commuting. I'm sure if I was commuting.
Oh, yeah. Like,
but it's just rose-tinted glasses, isn't it? But within about 2 weeks of living in Brighton, I just kept saying to myself, why didn't we do this sooner? Why didn't we do this sooner? Because I've made more friends. I'm a gazillion percent more happy. And I have the seaside on my doorstep. We went there today, actually, me and my daughter. She was really grumpy. We went swimming and then I'd made some sandwiches and I was like, oh, let's just go for a picnic on the beach. And we just had the best time. And I can't tell you how easy it is to practice gratitude when you're living in a place that you love. So yeah, I'm finding it amazing so far.
Good. And one of the things that you said has sort of been the constant through everything, including like through your move to Brighton, is your podcast, this podcast. So what have kind of been like the highs and lows of it, especially since you last spoke to Sam Sparrow?
So the highs without question is the Facebook group.
Yeah.
I would say that's been just the most profound kind of joy. And I can't even emphasize it enough. Like, there's been times when I've just been weepy over how much I love my Facebook group. I just love them. They're so brilliant. And it's just, yeah, it's such a beautiful, safe space. And
it's really supportive.
Yes.
It's really nice.
There's no snarkiness. Everybody, but that's all you guys. That's, you know, I haven't, I facilitate it, but it's all of you. Like, you're amazing. That's been the high, 100%. And then second to that would just be getting to chat to people that I really love. And I'm sure that you feel exactly the same way. Although we haven't really talked so much about podcasting, but you have a fairly similar style to me. And I think getting to chat to people that you just really inspire you, or you've got real chemistry with, or you know, whatever. And I often use the word fangirl because I'm a huge fangirl, unapologetic fangirl. That's just been amazing. And I said, yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say, I mean, I'm exactly the same. It's given me like a reason to reach out to a lot of people. And I've always been quite shy online. Like, I'm actually shyer online than I am in real life. And I kind of did follow silently a lot of people. And it's been really nice to kind of actually have that like legitimate reason to reach out, and then have them. I mean, I don't think anyone said no to me yet, touch wood, to be on it, which has been really, really lovely. So yeah, so I completely agree with that.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? It's so, and that's a really, I never even thought of it like that. It is giving you a reason to reach out to somebody and start a conversation with people that, yeah, like, I know that people sometimes say, just, you know, tweet me, whatever, but sometimes it doesn't, you know, tweeting someone or retweeting them or sharing their blog post or DMing them on Instagram or whatever, it doesn't always, it's not the same.
No, it's not.
And getting to have an actual conversation with them. And you know what? It doesn't surprise me that people have never said no, because people love talking about themselves.
They do. This is what I have to, like, tell myself every time I send off an email. I'm like, people love talking about themselves. Yeah. It's okay. what about the lows?
Oh, I think the lows, it's a lot of work. And although it doesn't have to be a lot of work, I think I don't like to whinge about it, but there's a definite entitlement when it comes to how people see podcasters. So what I mean by that is that when you're leaving someone feedback, I think it's very easy to forget that that person has paid for their own equipment, is probably sat in their bed with cushions surrounding them, so that the sound is a bit better. You know, they've put, you know, spent money on the podcast, and they want it to be awesome, and they've got these amazing people and having these awesome conversations, and they're giving it to you for free. And I think that really comes down to the entitlement that we all have around free content and not having to pay for content, full stop.
I don't think people quite understand sometimes the amount of work that's involved in producing a podcast, especially when, you know, you're not getting paid for it. So we both edit our podcasts ourselves. We do all of the work ourselves. And I've spoken to a couple of people recently who are quite keen to start their own podcast. Whenever I say how much work I put into mine, they're always like, wow, why does it take that long? And I'm like, well, and I like break it down for them. And like at the beginning, especially also at the beginning, it took a lot longer each episode. Like I have definitely got my time per episode down now. And I think it's probably about as tight as it could be. But I think I'm probably like, I don't know what your figure is, but probably like 4 or 5 hours an episode.
Mine's a little bit less, but that comes with time, because when I was at the stage that you were at, I was the same, like 4 or 5 hours an episode. I mean, that is not a long time, I don't think, for podcasting, because it's not just, like you say, it's not just about the editing. You've got to upload it. You've got to write the show notes. You've got to optimize it for Apple Podcasts, who only like things done in a certain way. And we're not even taking into account the fact that we have to email people, schedule calls, have the calls, promote it on social media, answer questions, all of those sorts of things. It's a lot. I don't personally think that 4 or 5 hours is a long amount of time for each episode, because there's a lot that goes into it.
But
I can totally understand why people would be surprised at that. And you're right, we don't get paid for that. Some people
it's half a day's work essentially. Which I absolutely love doing, and it does have a real reason for me. But you're right, there is that sort of thing that, like, people, I don't know, it's like one of the things that people just kind of like come out, that people think just kind of come out fully formed, like, oh, you just record the interview and then half an hour later it's up on it's up online and that's it.
Totally. No, it's not so much. But that's definitely been a real low for me, because although I probably appear very confident, I'm sensitive. So, and I do take it personally, because what she said is my baby. It was there before my baby. My first episodes were recorded when I was pregnant. I came up with the idea and started recording things How old is she now? 13 months, so almost 2 years ago, over 2 years ago. And it was a long time kind of coming because I just didn't have the confidence to put it out there. And I think it's also quite hard in our, I don't know, it'd be interesting to talk to you about this because we're in like the same sphere or kind of genre. So I was speaking to, Lola Hode interviewed me for her podcast, One Girl Band, and I'm going to have her on my podcast. And obviously you're going to be on my podcast. I've been on yours. I really like the kind of cross-pollination of podcasting. I think it's really nice that if we work together within our remit, I think it's a really good thing because you doing well doesn't mean that I'm doing worse. And no, vice versa. Not at all. In fact, the better I do or the better you do, I personally think the better we both do. The only reason it can shift, and I'm not going to say, like, there's definitely been times that I just feel, do you remember in one of the weekly threads that I did in the Facebook group, and I was like, oh, guys, I'm feeling so jealous, and actually I'm feeling super jealous about Fiona, but I'm owning this. and I won't give it any power.
But I felt it as well, definitely. Like, there's some people who you've interviewed who, oh, you've had a really good conversation. I'm like, oh, that was such a good, you know, and you do feel it. But I think your point about like lifting each other up, like practically, I think of it like both like theoretically and kind of like it works as well. But I think on a practical level, I do notice that when someone else has like a surge of popularity, their episode of my podcast does well. So we'll get a few more downloads. So even on like practical basis, like I think even when you publish that, I remember your episode had a bit of a spike recently, and I can't think what you had done at the time, but I just remember noticing that it had more downloads basically.
How interesting. That's really funny.
Yeah.
But
so just on that level, I think it really does work. And not to mention the whole, you know, like lifting each other up, you know, on that level as well.
I think, I think that's probably been a high and a low because I sometimes feel that other people, or not even other people, I think it's very easy to slip into what scarcity mindset again, isn't it? It's very easy to slip into comparison and scarcity and feel that what we're doing isn't good enough. And the reason that that's true is because someone else is doing better, but that's not true. And I've had really positive wins when I've reached out to people within, I mean I would love to have all the other podcasters in our section on my podcast, and I would really love it if we just had a girl gang of UK business podcasters.
Yes.
I would love that. I would absolutely
that
love
that.
That
is such a good idea.
I really want someone to facilitate it. I feel too nervous.
I would feel a bit nervous as well. We could do it together.
Yeah,
we could combine forces and do it together.
Yeah, let's. Actually, we should talk about that. Let's do that.
We really should. Let's like put a pin in that. That's a really good idea. I like it.
I mean, how much more could we achieve if we were all in it together?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that no one just listens to one podcast.
No, like, not at all.
That's the thing, is I think that, you know, and I think that there's like a, like, I think if you can build it up as a web, then people just naturally flow
totally
all of the podcasts, and that's great. Yeah. So Jen Lowthrop, is that how I say her last name?
Lowthrop,
sorry.
That's all right.
Wanted me to ask you, which do you prefer, blogging or podcasting?
Ooh, that's a good question. What do I prefer? Oh my God, that's really hard. I love writing. I love, love, love writing. And I really love the catharsis of writing, creating something and putting it out there. And perhaps reading it back another time, and I love the kind of evergreen aspect of blogging. Podcasting I found to be amazing for conversation. I don't have a lot of commenters on my blog, so if I get six, I'm like, wow, viral. So like, but with my podcast, it's constant feedback and the type of feedback as well. I will often get emails or DMs or, you know, people saying, sending me kind of long messages of, I really love this because, and I really loved you introducing me to this guest. And it's nothing to do with me really, because it'll be, you know, the guest has had an effect on them or our conversation or whatever. But I really love that. And I think I really love the collaboration part of it in a way, because I'm much more comfortable, even though I'm a total one girl band and a total kind of solopreneur, I love working with other women.
I completely agree. I like that side of podcasting as well. I like that it's kind of putting you in front of real people and having actual conversations with them, and it's refreshing when so much of both of our work is done on our own, on our laptops, you know, headphones in. I find it really refreshing.
I agree. I didn't even think about it like that, that kind of having those human conversations about blogging or whatever. It's awesome.
And the getting emails from people, I mean, I have the same thing, and I get far more emails. I mean, most people who email me mention my podcast at some point now. And I think it's because there's that real sense of, like, you get much more of a sense of who you are as a person.
It's more intimate, isn't it?
And I think people feel like they can then email you because it doesn't feel, they feel like they know you a lot better, I think. And they do, having listened to you, I think.
I think so, yeah. It's definitely... So I used to, in an old job that I did, they used to always talk about raising your profile. You need to raise your profile to get promoted. And it's definitely done that in terms of, it's really easy to get lost in a sea of people doing seemingly similar things to you, but you're the only one that can do you. Like you say, people get to know you better. I'm 100% myself on the podcast. There's no airs or graces. I waffle and I'm not eloquent and I swear a lot. And I think people, it either turns people off completely or people go, yeah, I like her. her style.
When I first started, I edited things a lot tighter than I do now. Like, I've kind of learned to embrace like the imperfections and like natural rhythm of speech, if that makes sense.
Now,
because I think at the beginning, I was like, every time there was a pause, I was like, oh, I've got to cut that out. But now I kind of just let it. And when I do waffle or my guest waffles, I just kind of think, well, we're having a conversation. So that's what people do.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah. So Monica Stott, who you mentioned earlier, asked me to ask you how you are juggling your work with parenting.
I'm not.
Honest answer, as expected.
I wrote a post about this actually the other day, and I'll obviously link that in the show notes.
I'm going to be checking back over.
Check
your show notes and see when you have actually written all of these things in them.
Good. Keep me accountable. I'm not really juggling. I don't believe in the juggle. The juggle is real, like you have to do it, but I don't believe in ever worrying about it, because for me, I know that if I want to work, then I can't work around her naps. She just has to go to nursery. So, and actually I need her to go to nursery a couple of days a week for my own sanity, and I don't really feel guilty about saying that.
Of course not.
But I think I can totally understand why people do feel guilty, because as soon as you have a baby, you start to feel guilty about everything every day. That's it. But I don't juggle it very well, but I know my limits. I think I'm just super honest with myself now, which I never used to be, about in the early days of kind of motherhood, I wasn't always honest with myself about what I could physically do and also what I wanted to do. So I don't enjoy working around her naps, and I did that a lot at the beginning. It really stresses me out, and I'm just stressy with her. I then get annoyed if she's wanting my attention. So instead, I'm very all or nothing. I'm either 100% with her or I'm 100% working. And that's why I just made the decision that when I'm working, she goes to nursery, and that's that. It's not a very good answer.
To be honest, it sounds like the smartest way forward. Like, that sounds to me absolutely perfect. I think there is this kind of myth of like the baby sleeping in the basket next to the mother who's typing away at her laptop, like that can happen, and I can completely understand that that's just not realistic.
I think for some people it definitely is, and certainly in the first couple of months, I mean, so many of my podcast episodes were recorded with her, I was breastfeeding her while I was doing an interview. You can hear her gurgling in the background a lot, and it's quite cute actually.
I'll have to go and listen back to some.
Yeah, I do. I mean, probably absolutely horrendous sound quality, but it's kind of cute. And for some people it does work, and that's cool, but you just have to find your own limits. You really do have to find your own limits. And my limit is definitely just work and no baby, or baby and no work, basically.
which makes complete sense, definitely. Lucy, I think that's all I've got. Like, I think that's all the questions that I had.
They were awesome questions. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It was an honour. Like, I was literally like, any excuse to talk to you, Lucy.
The feeling's mutual.
You asked me and I was like, oh, I get to have a conversation with her. Sure.
Shall I tell everyone where they can find me online?
Sorry, I didn't know how you wanted to end it.
No, it's fine.
Do you want me to ask you that? So, Lucy, where can people find you online?
I'm lucylucraft.com or lucylucraft on Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook. You can mostly find me on Instagram.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you did, please think about leaving me a 5-star rating and a review if you have time. This really helps other people find the podcast and means that Apple don't hide me in their vaults. If you fancy joining my small but perfectly formed bunch of podcast fans for chit chat on Facebook, head to facebook.com/groups/whatshesaidpodcast and come and join us.
Can I just say, Brighton has been so good for your Instagram. It looks amazing.
My grid is looking so good since I moved.